two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Janovic.
So if you just look at the quit rate, I think it suggests the economy is going gangbusters. There's trust in that next job. I think it's an indication that American workers have confidence in the economy. They quit one job, they'll land another. CNBC reporting almost 4.2 million people left their jobs voluntarily. It's just a phenomenal number. That was, you know, a couple of months ago, but the data like this lags. But I want to dive into the quit rate and how to know when it's time to leave your job.
It's a great and scary question to ask because we are creatures of habit. We like waking up and knowing where we're going and what we're going to do. To upend that, to change it overnight, that is full-on panic mode.
The stress of starting a new job.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So CNBC reports the best way, though, Dave, to get a raise is to make yourself part of the quit rate. So if you're looking for more money, the best way to do it is to say, I quit. Job switchers got 7.7% increase in wages year over year. If you compare that to people who stayed on their job, I'll call them the loyalists, 5.5%.
Okay.
So it's a little bit more. So you're just going to get more money. Plus, I think it puts you in a position to negotiate.
Yes. Right?
You know, I mean, I've always felt like the time to negotiate your best wage is before you start that first day on that new job. Like, you're not going to get into that new job and a year later you're going to negotiate this huge pay increase. It's not, it just doesn't normally happen that way. They want you now. So how bad do they want you? What is that want worth to them? So I looked into this book. It's called Leap. And the author's name is Tess Vigeland. And she wrote a book about the three ways to know when it's time to quit. So can I bounce these three off you?
Absolutely.
And you give me give me your honest opinion if you think this is a way to quit. So, okay. So here's the first way to know when it's time to leave your job. Quit reason number one.
I have three ways to know when it's time to leave your job. First, it's time to go when you have too much self-respect to stay. In other words, if you're feeling undervalued, if you're feeling there is managerial abuse going on, if you are feeling underappreciated, you need to have enough respect for yourself that you know it's time to go and go somewhere that does have that same respect for you.
Maybe it was because I grew up playing sports my entire life and coaches yelling in my face. I am immune to a boss yelling in my face. Like I've dealt with it my entire life. I have no self-respect. Okay. This would never qualify for me. I will be abused and abused before I say, you know what, that's too much. Do you still like me, coach?
Quit reason number two, your health.
Second of all, your body will scream at you. I interviewed almost 80 people for this book, other people who had quit their jobs without having anything lined up. And one of the commonalities is that you get some sort of odd physical ailment. They were perfectly in shape, and all of a sudden they had terrible back problems. People who got migraines for the first time in their lives. So your body will tell you, and you need to pay attention to it.
I've never heard that before. I've never thought about it.
It's stress.
The stress is seeping down into your back.
You're angry.
And
Yeah, you feel like you're overused and underpaid.
But it manifests itself physically. Yeah. I've never heard that.
Yeah, so I think your health is starting to take a toll. You get so many headaches. Maybe there's even some mental health concerns that start setting in, like, you know, depression. Which brings us to quit reason number three, the think bubble over your head, like how you're thinking about your job. Let's listen.
The third sign is if you are asking the question, how will I know when it's time to go? It's past time to at least start thinking about it. You owe it to yourself because you have one life to live to get out of a situation that isn't bringing you some element of joy every day. If you're dreading Sunday night and going to work the next morning on a regular basis, you need to pay attention to that.
I'm going to disagree with this one a little bit because this is a common phrase in sports, right? And we just had Tom Brady retire, you know, for the second time or the 900th rumor, right? We'll see. Until the season starts, I won't believe it. But they say as soon as you start thinking about retirement, it's time to retire. In the sports world, right?
Okay.
So when she says, as soon as you start thinking, should I quit? It's probably already time. You probably should already mm-hmm. have quit. Mm-hmm. This is why I disagree. I think you should always be open. Always be looking. Maybe not like full on two eyeballs looking at another job, but a little side eye. Aware of the good looking lady over there. You know, like... You don't want a full-on stare, but you want to be aware of your surroundings. If there's something you need to appreciate, you know what? I'm totally fine with that. That's how jobs should be. You should always be aware, always be looking a little bit. I don't think that questions your loyalty to the company. I think it just makes you maybe even more appreciative of what you have. If you realize, you know what? The grass isn't greener. I'm happy here.
So what about the Sunday blues?
That's good. I really like that advice.
Yeah, I think a lot of my friends will say like, oh, I have to work tomorrow. I've got the Sunday blues. Well, sometimes I get the Sunday blues too. And that's not because I dread coming to work. It's just I dread the alarm going off at 4:15 on Monday morning. So if my alarm went off at 6 a.m., let's say, I probably wouldn't experience any of that dread. But if you have what quote unquote normal work hours, banker's hours, and you're feeling like you are trying to like stop Monday from hitting you in the face, I think that definitely is a red flag that you aren't happy at your job.
She also clarified. She said if it is a consistent, mm-hmm. persistent thought. This isn't everyone is like, I'm just not ready for Monday. I'm not looking forward to this week. I need a vacation. That is totally natural. If it is that consistent thought every Sunday, you're dreading going to work on Monday, then again, that's maybe the time to start thinking about changing jobs.
So that's the quit rate. But Dave, you also wondered if people stick around in their miserable jobs because they're just too afraid to retire. If they're of that age where they can qualify to retire or are ready to retire, just because there's not enough of a nest egg to live off of.
There were a few things. I saw a Business Insider article, and it was talking, we've talked about the great resignation regret. A lot of people have left over the last couple of years, and this is some of the reasons why they regret. They quit in hopes of finding a better job, but that didn't happen. That will lead to regret. The new job simply wasn't what they thought it would be. The second reason they regret leaving. And the third one is some job quitters miss their colleagues or their previous position. So we're not always championing, leave your job, find something better. It's a big decision. Be aware.
Yeah. So as for retirement, though, like that seems more permanent. That's not job hopping.
Yeah.
But you were... suggesting that you thought people were also afraid to retire because they don't have enough of a nest egg to live off of.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So what's your magic number?
My magic number? Mm-hmm. I have no idea what my magic number is.
Let's find out what it's.
Dave and Dujanovic.
We're talking about quitting your job. We just talked about the quit rate and that it's really at a just a phenomenal high because of the confidence people feel that they're going to be able to land that next job and for more money. But Dave, you're also thinking that people are afraid to retire on the flip side of this because they don't know what their magic number is. Let's dive into the magic number. What's yours?
I have no idea. I didn't know I had to have a magic number. No, I knew the magic number was out there. I just don't know exactly what it is because it feels very far away for me. And I'm only 20 years out, but that feels like an eternity.
20 years out from retirement age. Yeah.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Where you feel comfortable in that. Okay. So what if I said that most Americans, according to a survey, feel like the magic number is $1.25 million in the bank or in a savings fund?
That's what most Americans think?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a good number.
It
seems kind of high.
You think it's a good number? That sounds...
I want it to be $6 million. No, I'm nowhere near that, but... I think...
You think it's high? What do you think? What do you feel?
Well, remember, you got to think, I've got to make and have enough saved that I can either live off the interest or live off the interest and whittle away at the principal, you know, a little bit. But I could live for 30 years after retirement. So I don't know exactly what that number is. I don't.
Okay. So Wall Street Journal says that number is now 1.25 million, according to most Americans. And that is a 20% increase from a year ago. This survey was released late last fall. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, if it's a 20% increase from a year ago, what's going to be? What's the magic number in a year from now? Is it 1.5 million? What about
20 years from now?
Yeah. Let's bring on Shane Stewart. He's a certified financial planner with Deseret Mutual Benefit Administrators. Good morning.
Good morning.
So that 1.25 million, is that really the number we need? Or we can we get by on less than that, Shane?
You can get by on less than that, but you might need more. And that's the problem, is that it's very individual. And it's very nebulous. And in fact, I'm with you, Dave. Part of it is for most Americans, it's a ways away, but also it's a moving number depending on what the lifestyle that you want to live. And it's very difficult to peg. There are tools online. You can talk to a financial planner who can run calculations, make some assumptions about things like taxes and inflation. And you hit it, Debbie, you know, is it 1.5 next year? Is it 2 million the next year? Well, probably not growing that quickly, but it will grow because that target needs to be, whether it's in today's dollars or future dollars, inflation's going to hit. If you find a way around inflation, let me know. I'd love to hear it. So that number's a little nebulous. Yeah.
So what does, let's say, 1.25 million do for me? Like, is that the equivalent of making $100,000 a year? Is it 80? Is there a way to kind of break that down? Because I think a lot of us have a hard time saying, oh, 1.25 million, but we can't say, well, I need $80,000 a year to live the life I have right now.
Right, right. And it really matters a couple of variables there. Do you want to use that 1.5 million, let's say, and not dip into the principal and leave 1.5 million to your family? Probably not. But if you did have that goal, it's going to be a different scenario. It's usually if you had, let's say, 1.5 million and you wanted to take that over, say, 25 years, you'd have the ability to take that out over time. And you'd probably take about $7,000-$8,000 per month taking that out. So you're right, Dave. It's right in the ballpark of about $100,000 per year. Remember, that's in today's dollars. So if you are 20 or 30 years away, you have to think about that as well, and it has to be more by the time you get there. But there's hope. There is hope. And the hope is that there are a lot of folks that don't really realize they actually are ready for retirement because they haven't taken into account all their streams of income. They think, well, this is what I have in the bank or my 401k, not taking into account they might possibly have a social program like Social Security. I've been surprised, and it surprises me all the time, to hear someone say, oh, I didn't know my employer had a pension or something like that. They really hadn't mm-hmm. taken into account.
So you're looking at finding out if your employer offers a pension, but also the possibility that, well, the amount that you're going to get from Social Security and the hope that Social Security sticks around. And then whatever you put away in your long-term savings plan and living off the interest of that. I feel like that $1.25 million, if that's what most Americans feel they need in the bank, how do you get there?
Yeah.
I just feel like that's so difficult to get there.
Well, and most, I agree, Debbie, and most Americans would say, oh, too much. I'm never going to make it. I'll just keep working. And what they don't understand is that all the pieces of the puzzle put together would probably patch together a 1.2 or 1.5 million, meaning, and I didn't see those numbers, how they were calculated, but sometimes you'll hear an article say you need 1.5 million, but that's if you don't have Social Security. If you added up what you might get from Social Security over your lifetime, it can be in the half million to three quarters of a million range over time, over time. So
okay.
Just depends on how they're calculating it. And we really have to look at how you're going to live in retirement as well. You're going to spend more or less. So because there are a lot of variables, there are some calculators online that would, you just look up and see how much money might I have when I get to that point. And then there's another calculator that you can use to say, how much money could I live on per month based on that future number? So.
Shane Stewart, thanks for joining us, a certified financial planner at DMBA.
Forbes reports a third of seniors will keep working well past retirement age. Okay, what do you think about that, factoring that into your retirement plan? Is
keep working?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't mean full time. I mean in a job that maybe brings in couple thousand dollars a month, something that you're passionate about. Is that an option for you? Or when you're done?
No.
Jiminy Christmas.
No.
David.
When I retire, Deb, when I retire, I'm done.
That's an absolute no.
Absolutely.
Let's bounce some ideas off of you. What about like coaching, substitute teaching?
Anything I do will be because I find it fun, not because I need the money.
Okay.
That's my goal.
River Guide.
No, I'm not skiing, not ski instructor. I don't want to have to do anything that requires me to do something for money. I just want to be able to do it because I enjoy it. I will ski. I will go river running. I want to do all of that, but I have to plan for it right now to the point. That's my mindset, is I have to be completely free that at 65, 67, that if I want to walk away, I financially can do it.
A number of people are feeling as though they will never hit retirement because of the plunge in the stock market, and they've got a lot of eggs in that 401k basket. And, you and I sit here, and almost every day you and I talk about in the breaks about the stock market, where it's at, where it's going. I mean, we just kind of had a chit chat about that. One of the breaks, you're like, if the stock market's here, and then I said, you do the same thing I do all day long. I think about where will the stock market be in 5 years, and what should I put in today? I mean, but what psychologically has this downturn of the stock market done to you when you look at your long-term retirement goals?
That I have to close my eyes, trust the process, trust what I'm doing, because I would have an ulcer if I lived with the ups and downs and lived and died by the fluctuations in the market. You have to have a plan and stick with it, and not have to pop Tums every 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I hadn't looked at my retirement account in quite a while. And then something prompted me this week to look at it, and I felt much better. Well, that's because the stock market has been doing slightly better. You should look at yours. You should look at yours in the break, and then I want to look at your reaction when you look at yours. straight ahead, I kind of suspect the death of Netflix may be on the horizon. Yep. We're going to explain why. Next. Should be next.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.